Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of Newsweek. Oh well, guess beggars can't be choosy. Wanted to receive attention from my music. Wanted to be left alone.
6 minutes after 8 o'clock here on a Friday. And normally we're talking food today with the chef. Kim Holmes joins us, but he's a little bit sick. So I thought I'd continue a discussion we had started last week about post-traumatic stress and alcohol. And I was going through my list of people, like, well, who could I talk to? Who could I talk to? And I see Ross Pape's name. I'm like, oh, we could talk to Ross. So joining us, a farming man from northwest Minnesota, Ross Pape. Ross, good morning. What's going on?
Oh, not a whole lot. Good morning to you, too.
What, first of all, the reason Ross gets to come on All Marine Radio is... he wanted to join the Marine Corps, but after his older brother did, he was talking to the Marine recruiter. His older brother beats him to the punch, and then he's like, I'm not doing that. He joins the Army. So we know his heart was in the right place. His brother just screwed him over. His brother screwed him over. First of all, tell us about farming. How's the weather? Everything in the ground? Everything going good so far?
Yep, we had a really cold start to the spring, April and stuff like that. We thought we were going to get in pretty darn late. Things warmed up, and we actually got in the fields in pretty decent time. And since we got everything in the ground, we've had somewhat close to great growing conditions. And, I mean, crops look good. You know, things are really moving along. We've had a lot of heat, sun, plenty of moisture. I mean, things are growing. So, I mean, as of right now, as it sits, I'd say things look good. But all it takes is one thunderstorm in 2 hours, and we could be in a hurt bake real quick.
There you go. Farmers. Never going to tell you they're doing okay. Okay. Just so everybody knows. Farmers, that's the way they do it. Does the president's snit fits with relative to trade in China, do they impact you at all?
Well, I mean, yeah, they impact. China buys a lot of soybeans from the United States. Well, I mean, they're the number one buyer from the United States by, I can't remember the percentage, but I want to say it's over 10 times. And they buy a lot of soybeans from us, and with this little bit of trade war going on, we've lost about, I'll call it 35% of our price, about $2 a bushel, something like that.
Whoa.
So, I mean, yeah, it took us from soybeans being fairly profitable to soybeans being a big loss.
Wow.
So, I mean, you know... But hopefully it's temporary. Hopefully he knows what he's doing. Hopefully things can shape up. I mean, you know, there's other factors that have gone into that price drop too. I mean, yeah, the United States has a great soybean crop coming. South America has a great crop coming. We've got a lot of, our world stocks are high. So, I mean, that has something to do with it. But the trade talks and trade war is probably the major factor of the price right now. So. I mean, it is what it is. There's not a whole lot. All we can do is cross our fingers and say, you know what? I hope you know what you're doing, buddy.
All right. We can leave it at that. We'll leave it at that.
We'll leave it at that.
You know, Ross, I got this thing in my head about why don't we look at, in our culture, in our warrior culture, why don't we look at, you know, young guys that are struggling with post-traumatic stress that are drinking and tell them you can't drink. We never say that. I don't know that I've ever heard anybody say, you know, I've heard therapists, oh, they tell me I got to stop drinking, you know, and, or somebody say, hey, you know, you should stop drinking. But I don't know that I've ever seen somebody collared and say, you can't drink. And so I wanted to have you on, kind of to, so that's been in my head for a couple of weeks, because the story's universal, right? Post-traumatic stress, you mix it with alcohol, and it is a toxic cocktail. And you grew up in a part of the country that a lot of Marines grew up rural, and I'm not sure what it is about rural life and alcohol, but they're, it's a marriage of convenience. Shelter belts, bonfires, parties out in the country with your friends. You know, it's a drinking, right? You come from a drinking part of the country, which I think small town America. So you grow up with that. Talk about, you go to war, you have what, 3 different combat deployments?
Two. 18 months total.
And just so you know, he's a cavalryman, okay? Complete with the Stetson and the Spurs. And you come back, you lose both your brothers in terrible accident. How does this combination of post-traumatic stress, alcohol, affect your life? Because you are going to the VA, right? And you are doing things to try to work on it. Talk to us about all of that.
Well, right, like you said, when I got back from second deployment, I mean, I wasn't alone. A lot of us, I mean, you couldn't sleep, for one thing. And it's not like you're sitting there thinking about getting bombed all the time, getting mortared all the time, you just can't. I don't know what it is. You can't settle and go to sleep. So what we found the easiest way to do is drink yourself to sleep, and you just get into that pattern. I mean, it was easy. You just get drunk, go to sleep. I mean, granted, you don't sleep very good. You wake up in the morning, you feel like shit. But that was the pattern I got into, and it was pretty well accepted because that's what everyone did in the barracks. You know, that was our routine for a lot of us. Then I get home and I probably, you get home and you're back with all your buddies and you're going to go party hard. But like you say, Riley passed away while I was on my second deployment. Ryan passed away after I was back home in 2009. And am I going to blame my drinking problems on my brother's death? Absolutely not. I mean, it's 100% me. But do I think that might have played a factor into, I don't even know how to word it, but yes, was it a factor? Absolutely. You mix post-traumatic stress in with, and losing your only 2 brothers, you're gonna have post-traumatic stress from that alone also.
Yeah, no shit. But all you're doing is making the pack heavier. Now, let me just, but you're going to the VA, right? Were you on medications at the time? Were you going to therapy? What else were you doing during this period?
I was still in the Army. I was finally got to the point where it's like, I can't even sleep with alcohol. I mean, like, I can't drink enough alcohol to make me go to sleep. So, it did get to the point where one of my buddies went to the doctor for some sleep medications, and he was like, man, it works. And, I went into the hospital. This law was on active duty, so, yeah, I got sleep medication. Okay. Well, then when I got back home, got out of the Army, got back home, started going to the VA. We started talking about PTSD. I got off of sleeping medications because I didn't like how I reacted to them. Like I don't like popping pills all the time. And, I didn't like the sleeping meds. But, so anyways, we got on the, of course, what every 21, 22 year old guy wants to do, fresh out of Iraq is go sit down and talk to a doctor for an hour at the VA, But, realizing that, PTSD, it's not just a badge you put on you. It's something. It's actually real. That still for me a lot. I mean, not a lot. But, yeah, I mean, you know, the prescribing medications at the VA.
So what do they, because normally, and the biggest bitch I hear from Marines is that, yeah, they're not helping me deal with my problems. They're more than happy to give me a bag with 9 different medication. Here's one to sleep. Here's an anti-anxiety. Here's an antidepressant. But nobody's helping me get my hands around this shit I got going on inside of me. So did you feel that? I mean, cause the best therapists I've ever talked to are former, they're both, I'm embarrassed to say this, they're both former Army guys, but they were Vietnam guys, right? They had been there, done that. I walked into their office and they had all their I Love Me shit up. And I was like, I know this is home for me. Like, hey, what's up? And but it was talking to a peer and they could say shit to you. I remember the first time I talked to somebody, he looked at me and goes, you're fucked up. Now, that's not what most therapists would say, but he made me laugh, right? And I said, why do you think I'm here, man? I'm like, even an Army guy can figure this shit out. But it was the beginning of a kind of a peer-to-peer relation, and he understood. Did you have a therapist like that, or did you not feel a connection, or what?
I have a hard time. I still have a hard time going to a therapist like that. Granted, there is programs at the VA right now, strictly and solely for PTSD. I mean, I haven't personally, participated in them, and I know guys that have, and I know guys that have had great luck with it. I haven't personally done it. They're kind of like the same, what you did is I actually met a therapist that was former Army. And, you know, you kind of go in the office for the first time and you're looking around and be like, oh, this guy's, okay, he must have been in the military or something like that. And he says, and he looks, you know, he looks at you and he says, so tell me what the fuck's wrong. Whoa, you know, who's this guy? And, you know, all of a sudden you click a little bit and you start BSing about, his deployments, your deployments, and you get comfortable with each other. It's like, okay, I got it. Okay. Right. There's someone to talk to, someone to BS with. But, for me, the biggest leap or the biggest step, by far the biggest leap I've ever made was, just cutting alcohol off myself.
So what?
By far.
Okay.
So, the biggest help.
So you go into the Army as coming from a drinking culture, right?
Yep.
And I'm not much of a drinker, right? So I travel, like, I go to parties in northwest Minnesota and northeastern North Dakota, and, like, I'm having a Coke or something like that. Even, like, I'm in my 50s and I'm getting shit for it, right? Which, Mac, you want a beer? No. No, I don't. Why not? Like, sissy boy won't have a beer? Hey, Mac's not drinking. Like, oh really? You're gonna shame me? So now you want me to play the fat card in front of God and everybody here? Is that what you want me to do? Because that's about what. Whoa! You're not gonna play the fat. Oh, watch this. Hey man, why are you so fat? And they would leave me alone. All right, didn't know you were gonna go there. But so you come from that culture and you go back to it. How bad does your drinking? Where does it take your life? You got all this. You got a heavier pack than most, much heavier than most. Where does it take your life? How bad does it get?
It's pretty bad. You know, spent a few nights in jail, a couple DUIs, which are expensive. You know, everyone tells you, oh, don't get DUI, it's expensive. Well, believe them, it's expensive. I don't really know where my career's gonna go. You know, farming is a lot of, I don't know, trust from your generation above you, and, you know, that generation has put the farm in your hands, and, you know, I don't believe that if I would have kept on the same track that would have happened. I don't think I'd have the opportunity that I could do now. I honestly don't know if I'd still be married. You know, I'll say my wife was a saint for sticking with me as long as she did. But I tell you what, I'll say the turning point for me was when, our oldest daughter was probably, I don't even know what she was, 2 or 3 years old. And I woke up one morning hungover as hell, just like normal. And, she looked at me. My wife went to work early that morning, and she looked at me. She was already up and playing. And she looked at me. She goes, "Daddy, are you sick?" And I don't know why, but that just clicked. And that was the last time I ever woke up hungover.
So, Ross, when I bring this subject up, the fact that you're a combat veteran. If you looked at another veteran and said, you know, a therapist could say this, hey, you need to stop drinking, and we would blow them off, right? But if I was a young Marine or soldier and came back and was trying to get my life together, and I was struggling with post-traumatic stress, and you looked at me and said, hey, you've got to stop drinking, I wouldn't blow that off. I might not do it right away, but that, you know, that shit would stick in my brain.
You're going to think about it.
Right.
Yep.
It's planted.
And it's not a combat veteran's, it's not in our blood. It's not, you know, it's not in our persona or whatever you want to call it. I mean, we go to war, we shoot guns, we do all the cool shit, we come back and we drink beer. That's what we do, you know?
You left and chased chicks out.
Chase women, there you go. But it's not the cool thing to do. I mean, it's to be the guy that doesn't drink. You know, what's everyone going to think of me? What are my buddies going to think of me? I'll tell you what, if you have a thought in your head that, boy, I wonder, that's me, you know, I wonder what life would be like if I didn't drink or whatever, I can guarantee your buddies have had a conversation without you around saying, man, I hope he doesn't hurt himself one day drinking, you know? And I'd say most of the guys, I was scared to death to tell my buddies that I wasn't going to drink anymore. And they all said, cool, you know? Absolutely. And I think they'd probably punch me in the face if I tried to pick up a beer.
Were you surprised that nobody, like, well, why did they give you shit? They gave me shit. Oh, Mac doesn't want a beer. Nice, Mac. That's kind of pissing me off now that I'm thinking about it. Were you surprised that their reaction was so supportive?
Extremely. I mean, you think your buddies are going to give you shit? You'd be like, oh, whatever. You know, I mean, you think about it, and you think you're going to get all these reactions, and you got all these, you know, conversations playing over and over in your head, and then when you mention it to your buddies, and they just say, oh, okay, cool. And it's really no big deal to them because alcohol isn't the main factor in their lives like it is people like me in my life. You know, alcohol was number one for me. It's like, I can't wait to get drunk again so I can feel better.
Right.
For other people, or for your buddies, a lot of your buddies, it's probably not. So when you tell them that you're not going to drink again, it's like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, where me in my head, it's a huge deal. I mean, that's like taking everything away from me. What I thought, anyways, you know. So, most likely people won't react the way you think, or a lot of people will probably respect you more. I mean, I've had a lot of people say, oh, I wish I could do that, you know, but you have to want to do it. Nobody, you know, I can sit here and tell you, yeah, you should stop drinking, you should stop drinking. Until you want to stop drinking, you're not going to stop.
Right, but
someone could throw you in the madhouse, whatever. You're going to come right back. Oh, you're going to start drinking again. But until you want to stop, that's, you know.
Do you think my point is valid though? For guys that have our experiences, that somebody appear who's had those experiences that would look at you and say, "Dude, there's no way it's going to turn out well if you drink. You have to stop." Do you think that has a greater chance to maybe not immediately, but that thing's gonna stay in their brain and ultimately someday saying, you know what, my first sergeant was right or my CO was right, I need to stop.
Right.
Do you think that's?
Yep. I think it's at a great point. You know, it's sitting at a bar while you're, you know, you both are three sheets to the wind, half in the bag, whatever, sitting at the bar, and you say that, nah, probably won't stick very well.
Right.
But next morning, you know the guy's hungover as hell. It's like, hey, you need to seriously think about, you know, where you want to go in life, because the route you're going right now isn't a good one.
Well, yeah, and you know what, Ross, you know, the stories that you see of veterans that commit suicide, veterans who wind up homeless, what percentage of those stories is alcohol a major theme?
Oh, man, I don't know, but I bet you it's a
really high number.
Big one.
Yeah, it's a high number.
You know, especially the veteran suicide, you know, I mean, it's just, you don't think, you know, everyone, you know, we pound beers, we drink as much as we can, because we think we're it makes our head clear, it makes me think straight, it relaxes me, whatever. I'll disagree. I mean, it's a very short lived feeling, you know.
Email Mac. Here I am thinking I'm going to tune in and hear about food, and you're crushing me today. First of all, I want to say to your guest, thanks for coming on and telling your story. Question, how has his life changed since he stopped drinking? And was that the first step in him being able to deal in some way, shape, or form with his PTSD?
How has my life changed? I wish my wife was sitting next to me right now. I tell you what, my life has changed. Huge. And for the better. And for the better. Granted, do I want to pick up a beer sometimes? You know, do I feel a little out of place sometimes? Absolutely. I mean, I've learned to deal with it right away. I avoided situations, but, you know, my life has changed for the better, personally, with my family, my job, my career. I would say I'm 100 times better. I wouldn't want to go back. That's for damn sure. Now, do I think that, you know, maybe I've been out of the drinking game for so long. Maybe I could drink, you know, just socially like normal people.
Right.
I think it's like, is it worth it? Is it worth to even try? You know, I mean, why even take that risk? But, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So your answer to that question would be the juice isn't worth the squeeze.
It's not even remotely worth it.
Got it.
Not in my book. That's my opinion.
Okay.
The second question on, was that, what was the second question? Was that the first step?
Do you feel like you have a better handle on your PTSD since you've gotten sober?
Absolutely. It was the beginning and it's the only thing that's helped. It's literally the only thing that really made a difference. For me, you know, I was on medications, anxiety, depression, blah, 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 you know, doing this, doing that, but yet quitting drinking was the only thing that really helped. And after I quit drinking, all the other things that the doctors were telling me all this time started to fall in place and started to friggin' work, which, as you know, I'm stubborn. It's like, they don't know what they're talking about, blah, 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 blah. All of a sudden, when you're not lying to the doctor about how much you drink in a day or a week, and you can tell them that, yeah, I used to drink 3-4 cases of beer a week. You know, I mean, no big deal. Now I don't drink anything. And now you start actually listening, and you start doing the things they tell you to do. And you actually want to try and make your life better. It's amazing. But yeah, for me, quitting drinking was by far number one, the biggest step to handling my PTSD.
You know what? Even when I hear us talking like this, I still have this thing that winces inside of me saying, man, this is not going to be received well. But the reason that it's important for us to say this shit is because it's true. It is the truth. And if somebody else won't tell you, it's good that you hear it here. If you try to drink and you try to deal with your PTSD, you will fail. You will fail. You will fail. You will fail. Yet we don't like
it. I don't know.
We don't like to come out and say it.
I don't know very many people that. I don't know. I've never heard of anyone that told me that, you know what? I'm glad I didn't quit drinking because, I don't know how, you know, I got PTSD, you know, I'm helping myself with drinking. I mean, I guess I shouldn't say that because that's probably what most people say. But
no, you never heard anybody say, you know, the way I got through is that I drink and, you know, and then I do what my therapist tells me to. Things you've never heard come out of anybody's mouth in your life, right? Because it doesn't work.
That's like the hashtag,
doesn't work.
The hashtag things you never hear.
It is. It's like, yeah, my drinking allowed me to deal with my post-traumatic stress. Yeah, get after it.
Yeah. My drinking helped me with my post-traumatic stress, made my life so much better, and my wife is so happy with me.
Exactly. Things that you've never heard come out of anybody's mouth on the history of the planet. And again, my point is that in our warrior culture, things that we know, right? I remember the first time I ever, you know, I started dealing with it in 1993 after a helicopter crash, right? Helicopter crashed into my assembly area. Out in the desert, pilots decapitated, co-pilots crushed to death, trying to save the two other Marines, right, in that dance of death where you're trying as hard as you can to save them and they're trying as hard as they can to live and it doesn't work, right? And how crushing that is. And one of my gunnery sergeants walks up and says, you know you're never getting over this. And I was like, what the fuck do you mean? Some of the best advice I ever got. He was right. And it was a high school educated gunnery sergeant by the name of Lance Y gave me some of the best advice I've ever gotten. And so when I hear us talking about, you gotta stop drinking, you can't drink, to me, it's of that same almost oral history of mental health by veterans, two other veterans, that is 100% truth.
Right.
100% truth.
Yeah. Yep. No, I, you know, similar story to yours. One of the biggest thing that sticks out in my head, you know, I mean, obviously there's all the stories or the whatever memories you have of all the, I don't know, I want to do air quotes, cool guy stuff, you know, right. Bombs and guns and whatever. But we had a Humvee roll over and, I knew the driver was, he's a good guy, good shit. And, Humvee rolled over and, he got ejected, and I remember standing there on the road because I was EMT certified at the time,
right.
And you know, sitting there working on him, and he was talking about, and we were bullshit. I was giving, you know, keeping talking to him about how he's gonna get to go home and blah 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 blah, because he was pretty messed up,
right?
And put him on the medevac, and he died on the way to the hospital, you know. And that one, to me, was just. What did I do wrong or what did I not do? That one sticks with you, you know, and bothers me. It still bothers me. I'm not going to say that I don't have PTSD anymore. You know, I mean, it bothers the hell out of a guy, but, trying to manage PTSD with alcohol, not the route to go.
Right.
No matter, if you're going to try and deny that and say it works for you, I'll argue that point all day long.
I'll kiss your ass on the steps of the Minnesota State Capitol in St. Paul when you get that one done, okay? When you can come to me
there
and
you
say
go.
This worked for me, because it doesn't. And again, you know, there's, I have a quote from a guy, he's a Navy Cross recipient, from in 2004, the fighting in Fallujah, and they killed 24 insurgents in a huge mansion in Fallujah. When they're, after the big battle's done for the city, they're just going through clearing. And they're really, what they're doing is picking up extra weapons so that nobody can use, you know, come in and pick them up and use them. And they wind up getting into this huge fight. They killed 24 insurgents there. Now, Ross, you and I both know, if you killed 24, you probably wounded 50, and there's probably twice as many that got away. So I don't know what they walked into, but they walked into something. They lost 3 Marines.
Yeah.
He becomes a celebrity because of, you know, he wins the nation's second highest award for valor, but he looks at it as his failure. He didn't get to those, because he couldn't get to those guys quick enough, they died, and it was his fault.
Yep.
And then the Marine Corps puts him on this, this rubber chicken circuit for heroes, make him a celebrity, and what do we do after we go to the banquet? We go to the bar. Right.
Yep.
And so, and the Marine Corps does everything they could possibly do wrong for him, sending him into this spiral. And he's lucky to be alive today, but his path very similar to yours. And, but he says this thing. I'll play it for you. He got out of staff sergeant named Jeremiah Workman. And I play this when I start my show every day because it's kind of symbolic of what the show is about.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, you know, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once the bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Now, keep the monkeys in the cage, right? But except they're not monkeys, they're gorillas. And they're gorillas on steroids, and they're predators, right? And they'll come looking for you, and the thing that lets them out of the cage, 90% of the time, alcohol. And so, I don't know. I don't know. So when I had this all rolling around my head, I thought, you know, culturally, we still, even after all the discussion of PTSD, we still don't look at guys and say, you can't drink. And so, one have people that have gone down that road on just to tell their story, and so that others won't be afraid when you meet somebody and they're struggling to ask, hey, man, do you drink? Yeah.
Yep.
And look them straight in the face as one veteran to another and say, you've got to stop. You've got to end your drinking, because the only way you're going to get your live a good life, get your hands around your issues, is get the alcohol out of your system first, because you can't unleash the gorillas every night into your life, into the life of your family, into the life of your children, into your professional life, and think that you're going to be able to overcome that, because you won't, 100%.
All right. And it's tough as veterans, because, you know, like you say, what do we do as veterans? We go to the bar. I mean, that's what we do. And nobody wants to be the guy. Nobody wants to be that guy that doesn't, you know, that's sitting there, you know, sipping on cranberry juice while everyone else is getting shit bombed on, you know.
Okay, let me just tell you, there's some tricks to it, okay? Tonic water or 7-Up with a lime. If they see the lime, they'll think it's booze, and they won't give you as much shit, okay? Okay, so
So
if they see you with straight cranberry juice, they'll look and go, what's up with that? But if you disguise it, even if it's a Coke with a lime, they'll assume you're drinking rum and Coke, right? They won't assume. But VFW is built around a bar. The Legion is built around a bar.
Bar. Yep, yep.
So, anyway.
And, you know, at some point, you know, put a lime in your Coke. I mean, if that's what you got to do, that's what you got to do. But, you know, one of the things, I don't even know if I've completely accepted or learned it yet, is, you know, what's more important, what other people think or you? You know, I mean, at the end of the day, you got to worry about you. And think you're going down that path.
That's just my own mechanism not to get accosted by fat guys, so that I don't have to play the fat. It's really me looking out for them, because I'll play the fat card on them. Okay? They don't think I will, but I will. I'll burn it down on their fat asses. Okay? So it's me,
yep.
Really. But you're right. You know, the social part of it, if you can't take that, if that's not more important to you than your family, your professional life, your kids, then your head is so far up your ass that I don't even know what to tell you. But.
And I'll be willing to bet that if you've thought about it yourself, someone else has thought about it.
Oh, my God.
About you. And wondered, you know, what you'd think if I brought it up to you. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that's where my point of, you tell people that, hey, I quit drinking. Oh, okay. Whatever. Could we still be friends? because I want to say normal, you know, but it's not, that's not a very good way, but people that aren't like me, I should say, don't look at alcohol as an absolute crutch. You know, they say, oh, you're not drinking, whatever. I mean, I could go without drinking if I want to. I mean, that's how people are, probably people like you, Mac. I mean, tell you that I don't drink, it's like, oh, okay, whatever. I mean, because you don't really drink that much yourself, you know, so you don't really see the significance in it that I do.
No, but I've seen it, right? Like, you know, for instance, mm-hmm. Ross and I have a mutual friend, okay, by the name of Al Honick. The Honicks lived and went to church in a place north of East Grand Forks called Tabor, Minnesota. They had the church had a festival called what? Kolache Days or something like that. What was it? Tabor Check Days. So we go there, and it's Ben Lunick, who's a single amputee from Ramadi in Iraq. It's Al Honick, it's me, it's Ross. And we're going to participate in what was the pie?
Pie in
the
face. We had pies at us, right?
Yeah. So it was some kind of thing. But, I mean, watching you drink, it was like, holy shit, right? And knowing you and the pain that you live with, it's like, you know, I hope something rescues Ross because, you know, this not good. And so when you, like, when I can't remember if I heard it from you or I did hear it from you that you had stopped drinking. To me, it's like, one of the questions I ask myself now is, why didn't I confront Ross? Right? It's, well, you know, how would he have taken that? Would that have, like, affected our friendship? But you know what? I look now, and I just did it the other night to a Marine. And I called him and I said, hey, motherfucker, stop drinking. And then what I got back was, yeah, I know. And I said, no, you don't know. Okay? I'm telling you, stop. You're killing yourself. And we should not be afraid as veterans to have those discussions with each other because they're powerful discussions. And so I'm banging.
And don't kid yourself. It took me more than one try.
Right. No.
To quit. It wasn't a first, you know, it wasn't a once and done. I mean, it, you know, I told myself, I'm done. I'm not drinking well. Yeah. And I made it a week or I made it 2 weeks. You know, I tried a few times. You know, the once and last time was the time I checked myself at the hospital, you know, it's like, I seriously need to be done. And, I kind of knew it. And I think a lot of people around me knew it. You know, even when your drinking buddies don't even really want to drink with you anymore and you end up having to drink by yourself. Yeah. You know, I mean, things start adding up.
You graduated there. Let me read you an email. It's entitled Salute. Damn, two recon Marines and an Army sniper. We need a bottle of. We need to bottle some of that DNA. God bless the family. I cannot imagine the burden his parents wake up with every day. And truth be told, Ross, I mean, the death of both your brothers, after what they had gone through, right? Both have combat tours, and then to come back. I mean, most guys deal with, you know, the story that you relayed about, you know, being combat medic trained and somebody dying en route and what did I do wrong? What could I have done better? And different sights, smells, and sounds that trigger that video in your head, and trying to go over and over it. Most people don't deal like you deal with the death of your brother, or my older sister, you know, deals with, you know, the death of her two sons, who were both shot in the head by her husband, who then commits suicide while she's in the house. Right? I mean, that's
right.
That's rough. That's rough shit.
Cool.
Right?
That's rough.
Right.
Yes.
And so anyway. All right. First of all, thank you for coming on and talk about it. I always appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
No, man. You know, your story's a great story, Ross, and well done. What do you got going today? Farmers, I know they're always so busy, always working 365
always
days.
Working.
365 days a year. What do you got going today?
Well, I tell you what, hopefully it's not too much outside. It is hotter than hell here.
Really?
Hot, humid, and muggy, so hopefully find something to do in the air conditioning. So.
Attaboy. All right. First of all, give my best to your mom and dad, and have a great day.
Hey, thanks. Have a good one.
All right. Hey, don't forget your wife, too. Tell Carissa I said
hi. I will.
All right, bud. Take care.
Yeah. All right.
Ross Pape, United States Army Cavalryman. Let me read you another email. So I roll into work, figuring a little bit of light All-Marine Radio today would be a good thing. Flip it on, chef's not on, and we're talking about some pretty heavy shit. The only thing I can say, Mac, is the two guests you've had on this morning, Ken and Ross, holy shit. First of all, thank you for your service. Second of all, my heart breaks when I hear the way they used alcohol. But I know it happens so much in our culture. So much in our culture. I appreciate you having this topic on the last couple weeks. It emphasizes to the rest of us as veterans not to be afraid to walk up to guys that are struggling, look them straight in the face, and tell them the truth. And the truth that we all know that you're talking about is that there's a common thread in veteran homelessness, there's a common thread in veteran suicide, and that is alcohol. We have to get better at it, and I think you're absolutely right. It's different when it comes from a fellow veteran. So many guys say, when people say that to them, you just don't understand. When somebody who's walked in your footsteps, or you may in fact have walked in theirs, looks at you and says that, it's different. Without a doubt, it's different. I just want to encourage everybody, after listening to Ken and now about halfway through Ross's interview, don't be afraid. Our warrior culture needs to be stronger. It needs not to be afraid to tell the truth. God bless Ken and Ross. It's amazing the good things that have happened in their life. Extremely proud of them as veterans. Semper Fidelis. Have a great day. Yeah, I don't know what else you need to say. Another email. Mac, where in God's name do you find people like this? I'm blown away by the people that come on their program. I think he means your program, and tell their stories. Holy shit. But they're among us, I would think, in every community. We just don't know it. To the Pape family, God bless them. I hope they know how much the rest of us around the country pray for them, even though we don't know them. life can be difficult. You're talking about a level of difficulty when you mention them and your sister that is borderline unbearable. I hope they feel the love of the people around them, especially in the veteran community, and know that we share their sadness, we care about them, and hope for them nothing but all the best. Thanks for sharing these stories that you have with us. To say it's sobering is an unintended play on words, but it truly is here. We all can make a difference. Have a great weekend. Yeah, there's pain and there's unbearable. And I was screwing with my sister last night. She's going to have outpatient surgery. She's going to have like that sonar that, you know how they blow up stones, right? I think she has a kidney stone or something like that. So they put you in that machine and they use sonic waves and they blow the stone up and then you essentially urinate it out. Notice I said urinate. I didn't say piss it out. So anyway, that's because I'm trying to be more grown up. So anyway, yeah, they blow it up and then you piss it out. So yeah, why fake it? So I text her. I said, "Hey Peg, just in case anything happens, I love you." And she texts me back. She says, "I was just thinking of that. I think I should write." I said, "Ah, don't write the letter. It's too hard." And she goes, "No, Michael." I said, "Knock it off. You're going to go have it." She goes, "I know, but you never know." I said, "Hey, so I love you." But, I think that when I think of both, you know, people that I know, and again, my sister, I don't know how she's still alive, honestly. And, you know, I know a lot of us saw, you know, bad stuff, but it wasn't our family, you know. And to Rhonda Sharpe, who, you know, I met in May of 2005, in their kitchen. When I parked my car, I walked up the driveway into the garage, and a door, somebody opened the door. I'd never met him. And so I've known him since then. You know, all the questions that you would ask, why us? Why us? And so, you know, to them, you know, they're just strong people. And I'm sure if they heard me, they would go, "Yeah, right, whatever." They would scoff at that. And then you have people that tell you all these things that, you know, that they think are well-intentioned. There's a purpose in this, right? The hardest steel goes through the hottest fire. God needs it more than you do. You know, all that bullshit. And again, if you're inclined to say those things, stop saying them. Just walk up and give somebody a hug. Because when you're on the receiving end of that stuff, it pisses you off. But no, there's strength and then there's strength. And I know that, you know, they would say things like, you know, we have a third son, you know, and we have grandkids now. And, you know, as hard as our lives may be, we have to go on. And so, you know, God bless him. God bless him. But, you know, but Ross's story, you know, he talked about, you know, in jail, you know, DUI. And so, you know, hats off to him for that moment, you know, and that he talks about. When his daughter says, "Daddy, are you sick?" That changed his life. That he was at least lucid enough to feel that. And that's my point in all of this is you may get blown off when you tell somebody that, but they're not going to flush it out of their head. Like, I did not understand when Lance Y looked at me and said, "You know you're never getting over this." It pissed me off when he said it to me. And I kind of blew, and I didn't understand it at the time. Since then, I've learned to understand how how much wisdom was in what he said to me that day. And his advice changed my life. And I've changed other people's lives by giving them that advice. Because they're better able to learn, to begin to learn to coexist with it. So, anyway. I keep a monitor on, right? The president is in Windsor, England, visiting with the Queen of England. And set up out front is, I don't know what unit it is, but it's the British guys with the big tall, I think they're bear hats. I might be wrong about that. I think they're bear hats. What are they, you know, the Coldstream Guard? I don't know who that, you know, the Queen's Own. Like we would call ours the President's Own, right? That's the guys at 8th and I. But let me just tell you, they look awesome. When I was a little kid, I used to listen to bagpipe music that my grandmother had because my grandfather listened to it. Yeah. They were albums, right? Old Columbia record albums with the red labels on them. And the reason I would say, Grandma, would you put them on? These guys would do their bagpipe stuff. And I used to love the commands that they would give at the start. You can't even understand what they said, right? A little geek that I was, right? Grandma, will you put that on? And you'd hear, I thought that shit was the best. And my grandma, she would just put it on. She would just put it on. And she would put it on in her, this is funny. They had a TV stereo console, right? So in this beautiful wooden, you know, console was the color TV, and they had a color TV. We didn't. Our TV was black and white, so we used to go watch Disney, right? We'd have dinner on Sunday at my grandmother's house, and then after dinner, Disney would come on at 7:30 and be over at 8. We'd see the start of Bonanza, which was in color as well, but we would have to go home so we could be in bed at 9. Yeah. But they had this console. So on one side, there's speakers left and right of the TV, and there's a phonograph, a record player, inside one. Like, you lifted up the top of the table of the console. You lifted up the top of the console on one side, and there was a record player, the phonograph. My grandmother would put those albums on. I'd sit there and listen to them. Doofus, straight up doofus, but yeah, seeing them on TV reminds me of that. Margaret Forden, one of the nicest ladies ever in the world. I have letters. In fact, I ran across them about a month ago when I was going through a box. I was straightening up some stuff I have. She wrote me letters when I was in Iraq. She has incredible penmanship. And so I might have 10 letters from my grandmother in Iraq. She had beautiful, beautiful penmanship. And she used to put a ruler on an envelope when she would write the address out. So it comes up perfectly straight. And she would tell me about life in where she lived in Edmonds, Washington, which is a little bit north of Seattle. And then she'd like send me a paper clipping of something, a newspaper clipping of something. She would send me a little story. She'd write things about it. And then, you know, she'd, it's funny. I used to, you know, I would always tell her, I'd sign my letters to her, your favorite grandson. She never called me her favorite. I just assumed the title. And she'd say, I'm very curious about your life in Iraq. Please, when you get a chance, please write back. And I would write my grandmother. So I see the, whoever they are, the Coldstream Guards or whoever they are out in formation reminds me of Margaret Metzger Forden, my grandmother. So, there you go. A little bit, maybe more than you wanted to know, but nonetheless, too bad. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Michael Musselman's going to join us. That's right. More Balmarine Radio. I don't know why it makes me feel awesome when I do these segments. Because, you know, people, I'm sure people listen to them and they're just like, holy shit, man. But Ross's triumph is awesome. And what they that family has gone through, not just with the death of Riley and Ryan, but, you know, with Ross's struggle, too, you know, which is, was rough to watch. Where he is in his life is awesome. Ken Rogers talked about, you know, his life. Where Ken is in his life, awesome story. And I will tell you this, my sister Peggy, the toughest person I know, where she is in her life, she's happier, I think, than I've ever seen her in her life. And so to me, there's in all these stories, there's hope that if you can get your hands around your problems, guess what? There's a bright future out there. And again, I say that, I mean, that's rough shit. That's rough shit. So anyway, and so I don't know why I'm happy today. More Balmering Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.